Good afternoon. Welcome to Passionate Internet Voices Talk Radio, Inc., a League of Nations, among other Internet radio talk stations, voices of the people, united we roar. PIVTR is the Internet home for anyone seeking quality information and entertainment, as well as answers to many of the multiple concerns that the average person wants to know. At PIVTR, we not only provide experts passionate about their work, we offer you viable content and solutions. PIVTR is also dedicated to helping published mid-list and beginning writers, unknown authors, small businesses, and entrepreneurs to further market themselves, their services, books, and products to the media. And now, this afternoon, let me present to you Happiness for Women Only with Dr. Barbara Becker-Holstein and co-host Martha Trowbridge. Good afternoon, ladies.
Good afternoon, and we're both delighted to be with you.
Good afternoon.
Yes.
I'm sorry, Barbara.
No, go ahead. I was trying to figure out a way. We're just moving to a clear co-hosting position here, and I was trying to figure out a way that we would kind of slide together and yet people would begin to recognize our voices. So I'm Dr. Barbara Becker-Holstein, and you are?
Martha Trowbridge.
Yes. So, and sure enough, you'll know us completely by the tone of voice and so on. And I am the originator of The Enchant itself, and Martha is an inspirational writer for Women in Crisis. Would you feel that that's sufficient for the moment, or in the...
Oh, yes, that's great. Yes. Thank you.
Okay, very good. So anyway, we're so glad to be back with you today. We're running this program, Happiness for Women Only, and we as women know full well that we have to work hard at happiness, and it doesn't always come automatically. But on the other hand, even people with a problemed life can still find happiness. And today, that is basically what our show is about. And we are focusing on women who have had problemed lives, and how they begin to reconcile happiness within the equation of difficulty.
Right, and Barbara, as you say over and over again, to have an enchanted life does not mean your life is perfect. And that's so important to bear in mind. Because we can become discouraged thinking, well, we've got all of these problems and this and that, and so why even attempt to have happiness? But we can do so.
Exactly. And one of the ways to recognize what happiness really is for most of us is to think about moments when you have been very, very happy in the sense of a sense of well-being, where you weren't focusing on the future. For example, your happiness was not just because you're going to England in 2 months. Yay, I can't wait. Nor were you focusing on the past. Wow, I'm so happy because I finally graduated college. You were simply in the moment, in the present.
Right.
And that is a state of well-being that if we can identify and honor and give it a name, many women like calling it the enchanted self because it finally gives it a little bit of pizzazz and mystery and wonderment, that giving it a name and recognizing it can take you away from your problem life into the moment.
And I think it's important to train yourself to pause every time you do feel happiness and recognize it. Just make it just an exercise that you are faithful to and to celebrate that happiness.
Exactly. Because we are really constantly besieged with problems and difficulties. And those people who appear very happy and are very happy, they are still working their way through difficulties. They may not share it publicly, but they are. I thought that it would be interesting today to look at a couple of women that come out of my case practice, my private practice as a psychologist in private practice in New Jersey. These women have been written up in my first book, The Enchanted Self, A Positive Therapy, which is available on Amazon or through my website, Enchanted Self, or bookstores around the world will order it for you. And let's look at them, because they are struggling with problems, and yet they still are well on their ways to finding happiness. These women have been disguised, and they have also signed off giving permission, knowing that they're fully disguised. But I thought it's richer. These are not made-up people. You know, these really are women who have worked their way through problems and experienced happiness.
And Barbara, the two women we are going to discuss today are great, because one of them, on the surface or to the outside world, has a very successful, well-put-together life, and the other woman has many issues that are evident to the world. So it's great that you have these two women to compare.
Exactly. Why don't we start first with Julia, who looks to the outside world absolutely perfect. She's in her late 40s. She's a beautiful, elegant woman, stylish. She's a very successful businesswoman.
And she's well-to-do also. She doesn't have financial struggle, which I think is important to bear in mind, as you were saying, that we can look so well put together and yet suffer quite a bit in our private lives.
That's right. She entered therapy, really, for some issues around her father, which then led into issues around her husband. The issues around her father were fairly quickly resolved. He was kind of clinging to her, but also very critical. And basically, once she could help him move into the correct housing for an older senior citizen, some of these issues really just took care of themselves. But in the course of her approaching her own life and beginning to look at it, she really began to share with me her relationship with her husband, which was very violating in many, many ways that other people would not notice. From something as small as waking her if she had just drifted off, to publicly disqualifying her and belittling her when she made a comment in conversation with others. Yes.
Now, Barbara, I'm sorry. I just want to ask you, as you're describing his behavior, and again, this is from The Enchanted Self, Positive Therapy, and from the chapter Meeting Our Needs. And I don't know if you mentioned, if you did, forgive me, her name in the case vignette is Julia.
Yes, it's on page 114.
Actually. Right, just in case anyone has your book and wants to read more about this. I wondered, as I read your vignette, where is he coming from? I mean, what is his position in life in terms of his self-satisfaction and so on, compared to hers? Now, we must remember that she's very successful. She earns a lot of money. She has everything well put together. Is he as successful and well put together as she? And could that be possibly, could there be envy going on that causes him to behave this way with her?
Well, I never got to meet him. I know, you know, it was all secondhand. They're in totally separate businesses, and he was equally as successful. It is possible that there were some family dynamics in terms of positioning and the culture that may play in to how people are viewed, and personality factors. You know,
And also that she, the wife, if he's from a culture where it's threatening to the husband for the wife to be successful and to be independent in many ways. You mentioned in this vignette, if I recall correctly, that she does a lot of traveling for her work. Mm-hmm. Is that so?
I think so.
That she regularly commutes between New York and Philadelphia for her investment business. And I wonder if all of these activities of hers calls up a lot of disquietude in him, because is it possible that his mother did not work or she stayed at home, and so this throws his whole sense of what a woman... Yes.
He may be very much the example. To some small, tiny extent, my husband falls into this. My father did. You know, men who basically support and are delighted that a woman has a profession and earns money, but also remembers their own mother's barefoot in the kitchen making strudel. You know, it's a dilemma.
It's a huge conflict. It is.
Yeah.
It is. And also, you know, when men are raised in cultures like that, like, I mean, my family was like that in many ways. I'm second generation Italian-American. The other question is, does it call up in him shame that he is not able to provide for the family? These are very deep cultural imprints we have from the time we're young.
That's right. And whether they did for this particular man or not, they could for your husband out there, you know, Anne or Mary, listening to the show. And that's why we do have to also have sympathy to understand. And it's interesting because as you go ahead in this case study, Julia made clear to me, and I was a little surprised, that her intent really wasn't to leave this fellow, that there were so many threads that really connected them, similar family backgrounds, children, interests. They were good friends when, you know, there were not insults going on, whatever. You know, there were many times that were workable. And she really wasn't looking to walk away from this. She was more looking for a way to solve a problem life within the life. So I'm saying a life rather than a new life.
And does he understand that? That's another question. Or does he feel threatened that the more independent she becomes and the more assertive she becomes and self-protective, does he feel on the contrary that she's moving away from him instead of toward him? It's very ironic, isn't it?
It's very ironic. And again, I think that I'm not clear with this particular man where he stood. I think what really helped them was her gaining a sense that she had a right to be a whole person within a system that she wasn't going to leave. And somehow, once that puzzle piece made some sense to her, she just flew with it. For example, going ahead in the case study, they had a summer home somewhere, and they would go up and rest and relax, and he could be very, you know, critical and make her very uncomfortable. And she, I'm just looking because I skipped ahead where this sits. She
page 117.
Yeah, they had an episode in the cabin where she, she was watching a show on television, and he insisted on talking on the phone, but he could have gone in the other room with just a few steps and instead stayed. And these are the types of tiny, small interferences with her peace of mind that were so chronic at this point in the marriage. And he actually became angry at her. She should have been angry at him, but he became angry at her for fussing, asking him to leave the room. So you get this reverse effect where her self-esteem then takes a drop, and she feels battered and put down. And it took her a while to even realize that she didn't make the mistake. He did. So she went out and ate. She took the car and left and went out to eat and just left him there.
Barbara, do you mind if you have that right in front of you? I think you've got some great quotes. Would you mind reading a few? Where
sure.
Julia comes into your office one day and says, "I'm finally at a place where I can walk away if I have to," which is great. And then she recounts to you what happened that day. And she says that he's angry. He says, if you don't mind my saying, he comes
Please.
In and he says, "Don't you ever make me go in the other room like that." And then he swore, slammed the door to the den and locked it. And then do you want to pick up here where she says, "At first I went into the bedroom and had a good cry."
Please continue.
Okay. "I know that this wasn't the most effective response, but I had to cry or I couldn't have gone on. Then I pulled myself together and said to myself, 'I'm hungry.' And I took the car and went out and had a lovely dinner." Now, isn't that something? That's just so victorious to be able to do that in your state of mind, to treat yourself like
oh, I
that.
I love it.
Yes.
Yeah.
So she continues and says, "When I got home, he was still in the den, and I went to sleep. The next day happened to be my birthday. Lo and behold, he gave me some very beautiful cards, flowers, and a lovely scarf." Doesn't that sound familiar, Bob? "I accepted them all very nicely, but then said to him in a quiet, clear voice, 'If you ever talk to me again the way you did last night, If you use that tone of voice and make negative remarks, I guarantee you that I'll get in the car and go back to New Jersey. You won't even know I'm gone until you come into the bedroom to look for me or take the car keys and look for the car. I will not communicate with you, and you'll be stranded. If you have an issue with me, I'm willing to discuss it, but if you abuse me, I will not tolerate being abused. Her husband responded merely by saying, okay.
Yes. You know, when she became that strong and that clear, what could he say except okay? And that's basically what happened in the rest of their marriage until I no longer saw her, was that she held her boundaries much more clearly. He basically stayed on the right side of the boundary, more or less. And they ended up having a viable marriage. I won't say a problem-free marriage, but a viable marriage.
Wherein she was able to, most of the times, feel a sense of dignity and a sense of quietude without his constantly eroding those two senses.
Exactly. And she also built a lot more personal time.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of people with problem lives get so boggled down that they think all of their time and energy has to go to the problem life, rather than realizing that they can still slice off pieces almost like an orange. You can still take wedges out that are delicious. And she then realized that she could have privacy, even say in her own car, to listen to New Age music, to get together with her daughter and the grandchild without his presence, and have a generational sense of fun and love and connection, and, you know, not worry when did he last see the grandkid, whatever. You know, if he wants to see her, he'll see her. Meanwhile, she's having good, wholesome, generational fun, and her mental health is improving, and she's finding happiness. She's having many states of well-being.
And it sounds like you're saying that she finally understands that she cannot rely upon her sense of happiness. This is very sad to say, Barbara, but for her sense of happiness to come from her marriage, because it's just not going to. And I think
Right. That's
a point many of us come to in our relationships, where we do need to look elsewhere. And speaking of the enchanted self, it's quite flies in the face of the Cinderella happy ever after motif that we've all grown up with, thinking that our prince, our man, whomever, our partner, husband, will be totally fulfilling for us. And
well, you know, probably even Prince Charming could have gone into overload. And I'm just imagining Prince Charming coming on a white horse to pick up whoever, Cinderella, Slenderella, Minerella, whoever she is. And she's saying, now, just a minute, is it okay if I bring my suitcases and my pet turtle and my kitten and my sewing kit and whatever? And he's thinking, you know, if this horse has one more thing on it, I'm out of here.
Barbara, you know? That's a great little, you should write, you really should do an imaginative rewrite of that tale of the white horse. And the,
right.
It's hilarious. Put it on your website.
And,
but it's so realistic.
And truthfully, sometimes we assume that these men, these knights in white armor, what are they in?
The white horse in suits of armor. But
yes,
we also, I'm sorry.
But that they have an endless capacity to be whole and to handle whatever comes up and so on. And inside, they have their limitations that aren't appreciated either.
Well, right. And I think that we assume because they're male, they're strong. And
right.
As generations of women go on and we learn more and more, we come to find out that women, very often because of their development through relationships, our relational development, wind up being much more emotionally strong than most men. And that's another sad fact in many ways, that we just, you know, we look to the man to be strong, when
yes,
in fact
yes.
We are often far stronger than the men in our lives,
well,
at least when it comes to a crisis.
Yes, it's true. And we're going to have to think more about that in later shows because it's very relevant. And so many of us really are determined to make the most of the male-female relationship, and we dearly want it. If we can leap ahead a little bit to Rose, I mean, she really got the wrong side of the stick as far as her early romance with her fellow and then what happened, and it kind of fits what you're saying in terms of perception. Now, Rose, for those of you who have the Enchanted Self of Positive Therapy, starts on page 85, and she says in the beginning, sometimes I still think about my marriage and the pain wells up inside of me. And I don't understand how I was so taken by George. Was I hungry for love and marriage, that the love poems he wrote to me convinced me I wanted to be with this man for the rest of my life? He tricked me. Now here it comes. He was so sweet and appealing while we courted. He chased, I want to be with you all the time, he would say. I didn't realize that he wanted me at his beck and call. It wasn't until after we were married that he began to make me feel stupid. Whenever I would have an idea, he would say, that and a nickel will get you a cup of coffee. Or his other favorite expression was, good intentions pave the way to hell. He would actually say to me, you're ugly and you're stupid, therefore you have to stay with me. So now we have the whole game plan.
Wasn't he, do I recall that he was also physically violent with her?
Yes, he was.
Right.
And she finally left because of the violence.
Mm-hmm. And they had children?
They had two little girls.
Right.
Yes. So she left. She got it together and left. And since where time is marching, the point of her happiness story around a problem life is that when she came into therapy with me, she was not in touch with much sense of well-being. There was a little bit, but not much. Of course, she enjoyed playing with her little girls, and some of the normal mother-child reactions were still alive and kicking. But her spirit was somewhat broken, and she didn't feel ready to date at all. She really was stumbling to just begin the process of meeting some friends, taking an evening out maybe to go to the movies with some gals from work, that kind of thing, or go to dinner with an old friend. And she was really searching the first kernels of how do I find happiness.
So well, Barbara, just the fact that she came to therapy to me speaks volumes about her interest in finding happiness. I'm sure that was a huge thing for her to do.
Well, I think so, but let's be realistic that often when people come for therapy, it's like going to an endocrinologist when your thyroid is really out of whack. By the time you get there, you want the pain reduced, and you've forgotten that if your thyroid were in the normal range, you would be playing tennis four times a week. You know, you kind of lose it for a while.
Mm-hmm. And so, you also hope that the moment you go, there'll be this miraculous lightening of all of your troubles, and it takes time and it takes work.
Right, right. And she did the work. You know, she did some, during her 3 years with me, she did some very concentrated work, meeting friends, starting to think about taking up yoga, just even something like going for a walk at lunch, just trying new things. She had a neighbor who said she'd help her dye her hair if in exchange for her babysitting the little boy a couple of Sunday mornings a month. These were major steps.
Mm.
And a lot of times people feel ashamed. You know, what's the big deal? Okay, so, you know, I did a little something, but what's the point of even telling you about it? So, okay, I planted some roses, a rose bush. Well, what, you know, that was better than throwing it out or not doing it at all. But the woman has trouble labeling it as a first step toward future positive states of happiness.
And the act of planting that rose bush is an act of joy. And
right.
As you were saying at the beginning of the show, it's an act of, it's being in the moment and feeling that joy go through you that's so important that is happiness.
Absolutely. And Rose began to get some of those waves of joy. She had some wonderful dreams that she woke up really elated. You know, just, you know how sometimes you just have a dream that just makes you feel so good? And she also had something happen where she went through a period of time where she needed to recapture her sense of well-being from the past. And sometimes this happens accidentally, and with my positive psychology training and the way I do it in therapy, I usually try to make it happen on purpose. And that is helping clients get back to their states of well-being historically. So for a period of time, we reminisced about some of her old boyfriends from before the husband and the ways they treated her and some of the very good times. She really had some very successful relationships and understood relating quite well within the normal range when a person, you know, behaved normally. And so that helped to fill her up a little bit again.
Well, and to restore her sense that not every man will eventuate into the creep her husband did.
Exactly. Exactly.
And that's so important. I think when we become traumatized, it's so easy to lose faith in all mankind. It really is.
Or womankind. I mean, let's be realistic. Sometimes, not only in gay relationships, think about these women where they each have a baby and then they split, and the amount of pain and discouragement, or just other relationships that go sour, and then we take it very personally and have a lot of trouble getting back in touch with permission for our own states of well-being, our own happiness.
Yes.
So it is a recurrent theme that we constantly have to work on. As you know, Martha, you know, I just lost my little kitty, last week, and she was just a dear, and I had some wonderful times with her. And definitely I am in weakened spirit for about a month, you know, when she was really failing and then doing the act of grieving the past week. And if I would just stay totally closed around that, I would lose perspective, you know, that it's a process. And just like a flu or something in the winter, yes, it's real. And of course, your love of humans and animals is real your whole life. But the actual anguish, certain levels that interrupt pleasure, are temporary.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that this is really a fitting theme. I can even say, I'm part of a problem life this week, you know, because of little Trixie, and still finding happiness.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really a very universal theme. Did I say Trixie, or did I say...
You did.
I did. That was my last little cat I lost 6 months ago.
Not very long ago.
Well, I guess they're just both up in heaven saying, don't forget, both names.
Right.
So, but anyway, to sum up and finish with Rose, because we're just about out of time, Rose continued to make small but significant steps. She upgraded her job. She continued to take care of her body. She lost some weight. She socialized much more often. She didn't start to date during the time I saw her, but she became more ready.
Mm-hmm.
And her mood was often lighter. There was less anger. There was less rumination. And she just was more like, you know, the person she was meant to be, to use your phrase from your wonderful books.
Mm. Well, that's great. So how old, we didn't mention how old generally was Rose when she finished therapy with you?
I would say Rose, when she finished therapy, was maybe about, I'm going to guess now, 42-ish.
Okay, so she met up with you in her probably mid to late 30s.
Right, right.
Which is a very pivotal time for many women.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And so is the 50, 55 age range that the other gal was.
Mm-hmm.
Kids are grown, husband is... you know, whatever is not working is showing bigger than ever if you've stayed together, you know, and there are difficulties that have to be faced. As she had her father deteriorating, you know, many generational things were happening.
Mm-hmm.
So we are done for today. It just seems to fly whenever I'm with you, Martha.
Oh, yes, same
such
here.
Such a great person to be with.
Yeah, and, I feel the same.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm going to mention again that my website is www.enchantedself.com. My new book is The Truth. I'm 10, I'm smart, and I know everything. And all my other books are there. And Martha, you want to give any information?
Oh, sure. My website is www.marthatrowbridge.org. And there's a contact page with various email addresses. If any of you would like to write to me, I would love to hear from you.
Great. And we will be together. You're going to interview a wonderful professor next week on your own, who's been on
the show
before.
Dr. Frank Summers, who was our guest August 3rd, talking about unworthy self. And next week we'll be talking about another wonderful metaphor of his, which is defective self, having this sense that you somehow are not put together properly, that you are defective, and how that plays out in your life. Wonderful. I'm really looking forward to that interview.
And I'm sure it all curves back into what does this mean for the experience of happiness.
Absolutely.
And then the following week we'll be together. So I'm going to say goodbye for now, and I think Lillian will just come back on to speak again, and we'll see you soon.
Thank you very much for listening to Passionate Internet Voices Talk Radio. If you enjoyed listening to Dr. Barbara Becker-Holstein and her co-host Martha Trowbridge, you will enjoy it all over again when you go to http://internetvoicesradio.com. Click on Archive. A list of names will spring up, and you will see Dr. Barbara Becker-Holstein there. Click on it, and you will hear this all over again. PIVTR, whether providing you with the advice of experts or giving a voice to the average person who would not otherwise be heard. PIVTR emphasizes quality and enriching programs for our listeners' enjoyment. And the next program coming up in a few seconds is The Proper Care and Feeding of Your Soul with Deborah Lentz Hill and her brother David Lentz. But before you go, I want to share this thought from Anne Morrow Limburg, who said, "In our family, an experience was not finished, not truly experienced, unless written down or shared with another." Thank you very much for listening. I hope you have a great day. Enjoy the weekend and promise to be a blockbuster one. And start getting ready for what? Halloween, of course. Thank you very much for listening. And remember, keep listening. Good night.